Well, here we are again. This is Bob Brundage. Today is the 11th of, or I'm sorry, 11th month, November 16th, 1996. And today we're talking with two gentlemen in Mystic, Connecticut. And these gentlemen are having a very successful square dance weekend. I hear you got 20 squares. And so we're talking to Red Bates and Cliff Broder. Now we're going to start with Red and try to find out a little bit about his past history and what he's been doing lately and so forth. So, Red, tell us where were you born and brought up, and how'd you get into square dancing and that type of thing?
Sure. Well, born in Connecticut, Waterbury, Connecticut, actually.
Okay.
1928. Seems like a long time ago. And moved around New England quite a bit. Finally landed in Springfield area, where I started into the square dance business. First of all, we just kind of danced at the, with the local guys like Corky Corkins.
And oh, yeah.
Phil Green.
Right, I remember that.
Al Brundage.
Okay. Al who, I would say.
Right. And, you know, it was a fun time, Saturday night out or whatever.
Right.
Then I got kind of interested in the calling part of it, so I started to fool around a little bit. At that time, I played it, guitar and banjo and some other instruments. And
mandolin.
Mandolin, yeah. Yeah. So we all got his little band and did a few things around the area. And remember one time calling with Bob Brundage. Bob did the calling. And we did the music.
That was the University of Connecticut.
Connecticut, right? Yeah, that's yeah. Right. Yeah. Then I went to Springfield College, and then Springfield College really got started into the calling bit.
Okay.
So that was part of the physical education program.
Right.
I was in phys ed. So I took the course in calling, and we organized some square dancing on campus. In those days, Springfield College was all men. So we imported the ladies from different all the insurance companies around,
okay.
Junior college, and
right.
So forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we had a real good thing going there for quite a few years. At the same time, I kept my band going, and we did things at local colleges and throughout New England and so forth.
Right.
After that, graduated, went to Philadelphia for a couple of years.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Okay. And in Philadelphia, worked for the recreation department. And one of my, they found out I could do a little calling, so they sent me around all the different recreation centers in Philadelphia organizing square dancing.
Good.
For the kids. That was interesting. Working with some of the gangs in Philadelphia,
okay.
Getting the square dance. I soon found out the best way to do it was to get the leader
right.
Once I got them involved, I got the rest of them.
Right.
So I spent a couple of years there, not to dwell on that too much. And while I was there, went to a square dance at Mac McKendrick's barn.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we, at that point, with my wife Shirley, at that time,
yeah.
We walked into this sort of unknown, and it was a closed dance.
Okay.
But we were welcomed. They found out I could call, so they let me call a number. And I can remember to this day that Mac was calling Alaman Bar.
All right.
First time I'd been exposed to it.
Okay.
Well, they kept twisting me around. We got through the thing, but I thought, boy, this is pretty high level. And he explained that this was some of the stuff that was coming out of the West, in the Western. From Pappy Shaw, and,
right,
mm-hmm. And that kind of thing. So this sparked my interest. From there, we went back to Springfield area.
Okay.
And that's when I really began to get into the so-called Western movement.
Right.
And mm-hmm. Whenever possible, I attended dances. I remember Bob, you were calling in Wilbraham.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, a very successful club there.
Right.
I remember Bob calling it to, you know, 25, 30 squares or more.
Yeah.
Without any problem.
Right.
And then I got a few records and started using recorded music. And my first club was in Palmer, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Organized from just a few couples out there who wanted it.
Right.
And they sparked my interest there too, because they were very enthusiastic, and we got a club started. And from then it kind of mushroomed.
Yeah.
Bob, you remember Willie Jenkins?
Sure, yeah, very well.
Okay, Willie was teaching around several parts of Massachusetts,
yeah.
Palmer, mm-hmm. Wilbraham, and several other places, like
right.
East Long Meadow. He did a lot, started a lot of clubs in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of got to know him, and he got me started with some other groups in the area, so I was hooked.
Okay.
And that's really how I got into that
right.
whole thing, Bob.
Okay.
The story from then on has been just a long series of years of calling and late nights and festivals.
Long distances.
Right.
The whole
work.
Yeah.
Mostly my calling was East Coast. I did make a few trips out west and so forth.
Okay.
Get around with that, but I enjoy it to this day.
Okay. Have you had an experience overseas, like on the continent? Or?
Yeah. Took a trip to England.
Okay.
Did a festival there with Paul Bristow, who's a very popular
mm-hmm.
English caller, and had a marvelous time. We called in England a little bit and went to Switzerland and toured through Europe a little bit. That was a nice trip.
Right.
And of course I've done a lot of calling in Canada.
Okay.
Used to make a regular tour up through Toronto and
right.
Ottawa and Montreal and so forth.
That's great. So, what about any of the, what kind of big events do you remember? Big festivals? Or have
yeah.
you attended nationals very much? Or?
Yeah, I've done a few nationals. I don't go every national, but maybe every 5 years I try to go national.
Right.
And I can remember my first national was, I think it was Cobo Hall.
Oh, yeah.
And at Detroit?
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that was a biggie.
That was huge.
Yeah.
I don't know how many, I don't really know the numbers, but I was very impressed by that. I was impressed by one thing especially. And the main hall was a huge hall, which is concrete, and it would hold trucks and everything else.
Right.
It was very sturdy. And Ed Gilmore was calling. And there must have been, I don't know how many, 500 squares maybe. And that entire thing started to rock. Because he was putting the rhythm
yeah.
that man had.
Yeah.
He had the people that were just all dancing in the whole building.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. I was starting to move to
yeah.
feel it.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that impressed me.
Right.
Tremendously.
Now I understand they estimated 700 squares.
Is that 700 that night?
That was really some sight.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever remember the cartoon on Sets and Order magazine? Remember Frank Grundine's cartoons?
Sure.
A couple of months later, he came out and showed a guy standing on a chair at the foot of the hall looking at the stage, and of course, they looked like ants. And he's saying, I think it's either Ed Gilmore or Les Goucher. Right.
Can't tell the difference from there.
As if you can't tell the difference
yeah.
just from the music, right?
No, that was a huge thing.
Yeah. And you've been a member of Call Ed.
Oh, yes. Been a member of Call Ed for several years.
Yeah.
I couldn't. I was invited to the very first one. Yeah. That time I was working my school job, and I couldn't really get away for those things. A lot of things I would like to have done earlier,
yeah.
but But I did go, and I've been there maybe 12 years or so at least. I can't remember exactly. I've been on the executive committee.
Right, I remember that.
I served as vice chairman one year.
Good.
And so,
yeah,
that's always been a good experience.
Too. Right. Any association with ACA?
No.
No.
I'm not associated with ACA. I have no no problem with that. I just think that we need to, all the organizations we can get, I guess, to help the most good. I think
sure.
We should all work together.
Right.
On the thing.
Did you come from a musical family, Red? Or?
Well, in a way, my father played the piano. My father liked to sing a lot.
Uh-huh.
It was, my father's a minister.
Okay.
And I remember, you know, I sang in the choir, and I would play occasionally for them in Christmas programs and that
right.
kind of thing. And Dad always wanted to, he loved to be, get people around the piano to sing.
Yeah.
That was his biggie. You know?
Yeah.
So we had groups over the house and we'd do that.
Right.
And while I was one of the ministries he had was in Calais, Maine.
Oh, okay.
Way up in the
sure, up there. Way up, right.
And we had a group of people that were part of the church who all also were musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And I toured with them for one summer.
All right.
I did Grange Halls and all that.
Yeah.
Doing country music.
Sure.
And had a lot of fun with them.
Yeah. So you were playing the guitar? And
I was playing
most of
yeah.
the string instruments.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. yeah.
That's great. Any military service?
Yeah. I spent a couple of years in the 82nd Airborne.
Okay.
At the land. I just escaped the Second World War.
All right.
Came in at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was, while I was in, the war ended.
Yeah.
So I never did get to see, to get over to Europe to see combat.
Well, the 82nd Airborne was certainly an active part of World War II, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What about hobbies?
Hobbies? Hiking? Skiing,
good.
Swimming, and mostly outdoor kind of things.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't play golf with all these guys?
Haven't picked up golf yet. No, not since I've been in Florida now for 5 years. I'm busier down there than ever was.
Yeah, good.
We work in Florida 3 sessions a day during the season.
Right.
So I haven't gone into golf.
What part of Florida are you in?
Living in, excuse me, in Northport, which is just south of Venice, just north of Fort Myers.
Okay.
On the west coast.
On the west coast,
golf.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that area is pretty heavy square dance-wise right now.
Right. You bump into Don Hamhurst down there?
Oh, yeah. Don's a neighbor of mine.
Oh.
Lives in Venice.
And has his own dance hall.
Yeah, has his own dance hall there. Yeah.
He's heavily into challenge, I think. Isn't he?
He's doing some challenge now, yeah. But he does it all. He teaches beginners and he goes right up through.
Yeah. So here's a, I'd like to throw you a little curve.
Sure.
What do you think is the appeal? What do you find appealing about calling square dances?
What do I find about it? Yeah, I think a little bit. I love the music.
All right.
And I love the association with people.
Yeah.
I like to see them smiling, having a good time. And also, I think it's one of the best possible recreations for people. Because it gets them active outside the house, away from the television.
Right.
And they move around, they get some exercise, both physically and mentally.
Right.
I just think it's the greatest thing. I'm not alone in this, is one of my biggest problems today is we can't seem to encourage the last generation of people to get into it. You
right.
know? I know for a fact that once they get into it, they like it.
Right.
Somehow we're not doing something right to encourage them or get them in. I don't know what it is, but
a lot of people I'm talking to say that we're not marketing properly,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably it. Okay, one other question, which is a little profound, and I've been asking everybody, where do you think square dancing has been, and where do you think it is, and where do you think it's going?
Yeah, well, as I have really kind of lived through the whole Western experience.
Right.
I was involved in the Eastern style dancing a little bit beforehand, too, so I do have some feeling for the whole picture, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me that when the Western movement boomed, everything was right for it. In those days, for the majority of women, didn't work. They, therefore, were home taking care of the house during the daytime, and when it became evening, we didn't have a lot of television, we didn't have a lot of other things to distract them. So they wanted to do something, so they would encourage the husband to get out. All callers agree, you know, first you had to drag the guy out, and then after you got him out, he was the one that dragged her out after a while, you know. And in those days, and then those people would tell their friends about this great recreation, and it kind of just spread like wildfire. Until it seemed to me in those days that everybody square danced pretty much.
Right.
You know, if you didn't, why? You know. Then, watching the activity develop through the years, in those days, you could take, well, I remember my first class, I think I taught maybe 7 or 8 lessons. And they knew enough so that they could dance.
Right.
Then it became 10, and 14, and 21. And when it got up so that we were teaching 21 lessons and above, then I started to feel that the class never was quite ready to join the other people. So then we had to have workshops for them to bring them up to the club. And that was a problem because you couldn't integrate people into that
right.
into that club very easily.
Right.
And there was a little split happened there. Some of the other dancers had been dancing a long time and they were very good and they kind of didn't want to, you know, the new people have come in, so there's some resentment there. And that, so those problems started to develop, and they became worse as time went on.
Right.
And then, of course, I guess maybe it's natural for any activity, but then I can remember the levels started to pop in. We didn't call them levels in those days, but they had special dances for people who could dance better than others.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, you were kind of invited in. Remember, activators and duplicators were two examples going on.
Mm-hmm.
They were kind of special groups, you know.
Yeah.
They would hire traveling callers to come through, and you were kind of invited into that group. You didn't just walk in the door. So that was really kind of the start of levels. As that progressed, it got worse, I think. And we started to get challenge groups, and they, the number of figures these people had to learn became astronomical, so that they became a hobby.
Right.
They didn't spend one day or a week.
Right.
They spent several days and they studied and everything else.
Tape dances
in the cellars and this kind of thing. So the whole activity started to change a little bit. There were a lot of dancers in those days, so that didn't seem to matter too much. And we still had enough. Clubs were still functioning well, and everybody's halls were filled and this kind of thing. So everything was kind of booming. And then maybe that went on, I don't know, 20 years or so. I can remember exactly when the decline started, but there was a time when we suddenly couldn't get the classes. Not as many. The classes dropped off. Or we used to have, I can remember, like 12 squares in a class. Not unusual. I can remember clubs having 25 squares in the class.
Yeah.
And of course, feeding all these new people. I can remember the Armory in Westfield when we had our beginner's ball. The Armory probably holds 80, 90 squares and it's filled with new people.
Guess who initiated that?
I don't know.
I did.
Do you do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
The interclass ball.
The interclass ball.
Right.
I never knew who started that.
Okay.
But anyway, that was their first big outside dance they went to, and
and it was big.
It was big in those days.
Right.
And so everything was flourishing, and this was true all over the country, not just where we are. I mean,
right.
True other places too.
Yeah.
But then something changed. And I wrote a little article, and it was republished a couple of times. I call it The Lost Generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt that was true, that there was a generation of people that came in there that never picked up the ball, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Only a few people. But
right.
We lost that whole group of people. They did other things, evidently.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other factors that entered into that, other social factors, I think. Women started to work. Both people working. Therefore, they weren't interested in going out in the evening. So what do? You buy a tape and sit down and watch the movie at home.
Right.
And so I think that was when we started to drop. And of course, at first, we had enough people that it didn't show up too much. But as time went on and we didn't have our classes, and the attrition at the other end happened, you could see the numbers dropping.
Mm-hmm.
Where around the Springfield area, when we were calling, Cliff remembers that too. Cliff Broder was a young fellow in those days. But his father did a lot of promoting of square dances and wins roll counters, and he remembers the big crowd, traveling callers coming through. And the hall filled so that if you went on a Saturday night and didn't get there in time, you couldn't get in a lot of places. But that all changed. And so now we've been kind of battling that for maybe the last 15 years or so.
Right.
I guess it's been a steady decline. Unfortunately, I think we face up to the fact. We're not getting classes now that I see in any big numbers. People have three squares in a class now. They think they got a good class.
Right.
Whereas if I had it back in the old days, I would almost say, well, we won't bother with this one. You know, we have enough people.
Right.
You know, so. It's time, but the activity is still good for those that are in it. It's just that we're not feeding it. And I know Colorab has been on this thing for years. The best minds in the country, as far as spread anything goes, have been trying to figure out how to do something about it. And nobody seems to come up with the answers. We come up with a lot of things we try. But I haven't seen anything that's really working. Bob, that's kind of my assessment of what's happened. A lot of people blame the levels. And I'm not sure that that is something that wouldn't have happened anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be a natural thing that happens in an activity. If you look at other activities, people do have levels in it, like tennis, for instance.
Sure.
You climb the ladder in tennis, you got your top players and your lower. So I'm not sure I think that was a phenomenon that happened, and it could have contributed some way to taking people away from a lower level.
Mm-hmm.
I think it did skim off some of the better, both better. Dancers from the plus level, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're doing a good example of what has happened today is we have a little festival in Bennington now that Cliff and I run.
Right.
Last year we had 60 squares. There were 15 squares of challenge C1 dancers. There were 22 squares of A2, 11 of A1, 5 squares of plus people registered for that. And I talked to other callers today and they say that's typical of a lot of festivals.
Right.
The strength is in the people are dancing. Now that's the picture as I see it. You know, I don't know. I would like to see it change. I would like to see some new group of people come in, a younger group and younger callers.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are beginning to think that what we really need is an activity where you don't have to go 40 weeks in order to join the club, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And that there should be an entry level, if you will, at a lower level, excuse the expression, and that there should be programs which appeal to this group of people and is available to them. That's the biggest problem now. There are hardly any groups around the country, unless you talk about Jerry Helps groups in Cincinnati, and others around the country like him, where people can dance once a month, or they can dance once every 3 months and still be able to go and dance. So you feel that this has got to be what's going to be coming sometime in the future, and if so, don't you think that, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but don't you think we'd never be able to convert our present-day dancers into that, into that philosophy?
No, we can't. It's got to be a new bunch of dancers.
Right.
And that could happen. And I think, I would be a bit surprised if it did happen. I think that the activity is that good that it's not going to die.
Right.
I don't have that kind of a feeling at all. Some people do. They say, well, 10 years won't have it at all. And I say, baloney.
Yeah.
I think that it would be around a lot longer than that.
Right. Well, I've had one interview where the caller said, you know, the last one off, turn out the lights.
Yeah.
I kind of hate to hear that, but be that as it may. What about line dancing and country western? Are you doing anything?
I'm not doing anything with it.
Okay.
There are guys, and I see that in Florida a lot.
Right.
That's practically all they do.
That's all.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And they do have, but that activity too had its boom, and I think it's sliding off the other end.
For the same reason, somebody was just saying, because they're getting too complicated.
Yeah. Sure. That's right. They had nice, simple lines, right?
Yeah.
And then they add some of those things that are tough. I mean, you have to memorize those routines, you know?
Right.
The same with country western.
Yeah. Now,
country western basically is a very simple thing. Most people can learn in an hour and dance, you know, a simple country two-step.
Yeah.
But then they come on TV with all these real fancy dancers, flourishes and all this
right.
stuff. That the average person can't do anyway.
Yeah.
And the people in Florida can't do it because they can't raise their arm over their head to do it in the first place, you know.
You got it, right.
So that, I think that is the phase two that they're going to go through.
Right.
I'm not really concerned about that.
Okay. Have you, do you personally do anything with round dancing?
Nothing very much, no. In my basic classes, I might do some simple rounds.
Yeah. Okay.
Just as some variety and get into dancing
right.
to the music. But no, round dancing has become a specialty. And the advanced rounds and so forth are done by, and I don't teach rounds.
Right. Okay. So, well, this has been a very interesting conversation, Red, and I appreciate you taking the time. I know you have a busy weekend schedule here, and you got to go back to work here pretty quick.
Yeah.
So lunch is over, and So we're going to shift the mic over to your buddy here, Cliff Broder. And thanks for taking the time, Red.
It's been my pleasure, Bob.
Really appreciate it.
Really is.
Okay.
Yep.